Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly. How are you? Can you hear me, Deborah? We're having some technical issues.
You know what? I can hear you well enough. I will just tune up my ears. How's that?
Clean the wax out.
Kelly, I need to say the most exciting news on the planet for you today, if that's okay.
I'm not pregnant again. Air. I'm not pregnant again. Please, just make that known.
No. Because Moose, your dog, would not allow for that. However, you did get licensed. You passed your test. This is so exciting.
I am pretty excited. I'm smiling from ear to ear. I'm happy. Onward into this exciting journey. And I even had our car attendant, Casey, pray for me. Like, that's how nervous I was. Like, we love him. He's our car attendant in the studio. And I'm like, Casey, I'm taking my test. You got to pray for me. So when I pulled up, he's like, did you pass? I'm like, yes. He's like, I said a prayer. It was so cute. So I'm very, very excited. But thank you for all your support, Deborah. You've been so encouraging and really, really appreciate it.
Well, my biggest question to you, Kelly, is, so how did you process this in the last few days? Because this happened, you found this out on
Wednesday.
Thursday, right?
Wednesday.
Wednesday. Yes. So, like, what did you do over the week? Like, how did you deal with this? It's, like, so exciting.
So the test took me 4 hours and 15 minutes. It came up on the screen immediately, and it said pass, and I was a little bit in shock, and then they printed out the results, and so I had to read the results again. I'm like, let me just make sure before I, like, do cartwheels in the middle of this testing center. So I definitely was, like, kind of in shock for a little bit, and I feel like then the next day it really kicked in, like, oh my God, it's over. This long journey has taken me so long, and I really feel like I birthed a child. A Freudian child. We went to Newport Beach with the family. It was so nice. Like, it just felt like, I felt like every free moment I was studying. So I felt like it could finally, like, I could just relax. It was nice. So,
aww.
Yeah, it was great.
Yay.
It was really cool.
I'm so excited. Yay. So you are amazing. And you'll make such a wonderful contribution to our field. I am so happy to have you as part of that.
You're so sweet. Thank you so much. So, well, let's talk about last week's guest. Tell me what you thought.
Wait. You're not asking me about me. Wait one second here.
I didn't know if you wanted to pass along.
I got through the bridal shower was the big event.
That was this weekend?
This week. Yeah,
oh,
for Remy, my niece. Yes.
That was accomplished.
Checklist done. She had a great time. She's back in Hong Kong, and Tiffany was here, and it was a really amazing weekend with lots of family and all these beautiful things.
Oh,
now we can move on.
No, I'm so sorry. I thought that I know you've had a stressful.
It's
week.
All about you, right?
No. I thought you had a stressful week, so I thought, you know what?
I love you. Okay, yeah. Last week's show.
Yes, so we had
amazing
Seltzer, the medical medium, and so he was pretty amazing. So I got into a car accident a couple weeks ago, and he was like, yeah, I sensed some neck pain. I mean, he knew. That was kind of nuts. But I loved his energy, and, you know, he was just wonderful. Such a nice guy, and just really, you can tell he's just a good soul. It was a really, really wonderful show.
Super beautiful guy. I mean, just amazing on every heart level, and just felt like I was, like, in good care being next to him.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes. I felt the same way. Very, very good energy. Well, I'm super excited for our guest today. Like, super, super excited. And I'm going to share this. I shared it with the guest. So my mom from New Jersey, nice Jewish woman, she calls me up and she's like, Kelly, oh my God, I was watching the Today Show. She's like, and you have to have Dr. Gail Salz on your show. And she said she wrote this amazing book, The Power of Different. And I've heard of Dr. Salz. Who hasn't? I mean, she's such an amazing psychiatrist. So I was like, oh, yes. And so I give my mom the credit for butting this whole idea. But I'll give Dr. Satz the credit for actually being amazing. So we're going to have her on today, and I'm super, super excited. Do you want to read her bio, Deborah, or should I?
Well, sure, I'd be happy to. Okay, so today we have Dr. Salt, best known for her work as a relationship, family, emotional well-being, and mental health wellness contributor in the media, and frequently shares her expertise and advice in print, online, on television, and radio. She's a best-selling author of numerous books, including two for children, and the go-to expert on a variety of important psychological issues, as well as the chair of the 92nd Street Y, 7 Days of Genius Advisory Committee. Her newest book, The Power of Different, The Link Between Disorder and Genius, was released March 7, 2017. Dr. Saltz is an associate professor of psychiatry at the New York Presbyterian Hospital and a psychoanalyst with the New York Psychoanalytic Institute and has a private practice in Manhattan. Welcome, Dr. Saltz.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you, Mom, for recommending me.
So, love it.
Yeah, we're so excited. My older son, the reason I think my mom said this, my older son is very, very bright and has ADHD. And just I just feel like this book completely speaks to me. And I'm so excited that you have written about it and really are educating everybody out there. And I just feel like it comes at just such a perfect time.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it is a great time. In a way, it's long overdue, right? But better late than never. In terms of, you know, helping people to understand that what we have been seeing as sort of a wholly negative problem and struggle is really not the whole picture, and how important it is for parents and the people and individuals who are affected and educators and clinicians to all understand that.
So you talk a little bit about brain difference, and I would love for you to speak about that, and, you know, why do people have them and what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. So I sort of coined this term really because unfortunately, first of all, we have such stigma around terms like mental illness or learning disorder, and in addition, those terms do not capture what's going on. What's going on is that, to some degree, we all have slightly differently wired brains. That the symptoms your brain may manifest and the strengths your brain may manifest have to do with the connectedness and variations in those connections of the brain. So area, you know, how one structure is connected to another via a pathway, and those pathways and those structures and how they interrelate, there's tremendous variation from individual to individual. That's going to be increasingly apparent when the full results of the Connectome Project, which is an ongoing part of the Obama administration's brain initiative, comes out. That project looks at 12,000, quote, normal brains. And, you know, it's already apparent, you know, how much variation there is from person to person. And that's something unique about the brain, as opposed to other organs. But I also really wanted to point out that these differences, while something can be different enough, let's say, or enough of a departure that it perhaps means you are struggling with a symptom, at the same time, that same difference often correlates strongly to a very particular strength or ability. And it is the reason that if you frankly look back in history at some of the most iconic geniuses of all time, you know, the Ernest Hemingways, the Vincent van Goghs, the Abraham Lincolns, even the Albert Einstein, they all struggled with something that was different that today we would likely qualify as either a mental illness and or a learning disability.
Oh, that is fascinating and so interesting. Can you take a little moment here and just kind of talk about brain development just for a moment so our audience kind of gets a conceptualization of what actually happens from the time we're born to adulthood? I used to hear about there was, you know, the plasticity or flexibility,
right,
or what changes,
right.
What does all that mean?
Yeah, so when we talk about the brain, one of the more important ideas is that the brain is plastic, meaning that it can keep changing and essentially, in a way, you know, regenerating or forming new pathways or new connections to some, you know, somewhat throughout life, which is really unique in terms of an organ. But it's most plastic the younger you are. So children are developing and having brain changes at a fairly rapid rate. And what's important about that, from my perspective as a psychiatrist, is that you can potentially affect change by doing certain things, you know, to that person, for that person, in that person's environment. And what's also important to understand is what drives these changes. Well, the best we could say at this point is certainly there is a genetic component, a biological component, meaning, you know, you are born with certain givens, let's say, that do affect your brain's development. But what we now understand in more recent years is genes are not static. They don't just, it's not like you got a program and that's going to be the program. The environment, as it goes on, as it affects you, as it interrelates with the next layer and the next layer of what happens in the environment, turns genes off and on. And so your essentially what is genetically, biologically affecting your brain's development can change with the environment, and does change with the environment. And all of those things conspire to mean that at certain times, you know, your brain may move in a certain direction, let's say, because of trauma, you know, and that might create more symptoms or the emergence of something that's a problem. Or it might, you, for example, you know, we talk about how important it is to get early treatment if you're a child who, for instance, is on the autism spectrum, because the earlier intervention when the brain is most plastic allows for changes to occur that may mean symptom relief.
Mm, yes.
Yeah, amazing. Kelly, I know you have a lot to say about this.
I'm such a proponent for early intervention, and I love everything that you're talking about, and I'm so happy that you're making this known. And I think it's so important. I mean, you know, basically I love your message that, you know, you're not successful because of a condition. But I mean, you can be successful despite having this difference and, you know, just viewing it differently. I absolutely love that. So I guess I would love to hear it from you. Are there any tips basically for identifying a problem brain difference in your child? I mean, I'm a big proponent that mothers kind of know instinctually, but obviously, like, yeah, I would love to hear kind of your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, that's a fair point. Mothers do often know instinctually, in the sense that they have a sense that something has changed, or something has, you know, their child has fallen off track in some way, or something seems really not right. But the problem is that also mothers may unwittingly, you know, not because they want to feel this way, but be so frightened of the idea that their child has an issue going on, and that there's stigma around that issue, and their child will be labeled, and, you know, it means they can't be successful in life, etc., that they may keep themselves from even knowing, you know, that there is a problem going on with their child. And part of my goal in writing this book is to, you know, round out the picture so that we can realize how complicated the picture is, instead of just stigmatizing these issues, which is often what delays treatment. So it's really like 2 to 5 years between presentation of symptom and a child actually being brought in for an evaluation and treatment.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Too long. And part of the reason for that is that it's hard for parents to see and acknowledge to themselves that there is something going on. Or sometimes it is harder to recognize. Is this just, you know, unusual kid behavior? Or is this, you know, something really more of a symptomatic presentation of something that really deserves treatment? And what I would say is that the bar is when it does start to interfere with functioning. So, of course, kids go through times where they may be a little more anxious, or where they may be a little more sad or angsty or irritable, or where they may feel like it's harder to concentrate. Many of these things that I talk about that are diagnoses are really simply further out on the continuum of very normal behavior. I mean, that's really, if you want to look at psychopathology as a whole, that's the case. We all have all of these things. It's just that when any one of them become so extreme that your functioning is impaired. So for a child, what would that be? Their schoolwork is suffering. You know, you see a change. They can't rise to the next occasion, or they can't, or they fall off the curve in some way. Their social relationships are affected. You know, they're suddenly, you know, losing friends, or can't get along with friends, or can't make new friends. Their, you know, family relationships might be suffering, or you might see a regression in behavior at home. You know, some milestone they'd accomplished, and now they've lost it. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things should be red flags that there might be something more significant going on that you would want to get evaluated.
Wow, Dr. Saltz, what you're saying is so profound and so important, because I think a lot of parents, we all experience anxiety, right? I mean, that's the one thing. Like, we all have all of these things. And anxiety is one of the most prevalent symptoms that most of us have experienced at some point in our lives, whether it's social anxiety or just personal anxiety or just anxiety. And so how does a parent look at their child and say, oh, this is just anxiety, or is this really something more? Because I just know so many parents who just say, he's just a little anxious, you know, but then it builds and builds and builds.
Right. So, yes, anxiety is 100% normal. In fact, it's evolutionarily important, right? Because if you didn't have that danger signal telling you that there's a bear outside the cave and you best not come out because it will eat you, then, you know, you weren't the survivor. So Darwin would say, it's important to have anxiety in your system of potential emotions, let's say. But for children, of course, it is A, normal to have anxiety sometimes, B, to go through developmental periods where you have heightened anxiety. So developmental periods where it's normal to have more separation anxiety or more stranger anxiety or more social anxiety. But the question is, does it rise to the level that it impairs your child's functioning? So if they cannot leave you to go to school without, you know, like terrible trauma or simply not at all, if they can't go to a friend's house to play because they can't be separated from you, if they, you know, so the question is the anxiety impacting that their lives, their functioning as children? And that's really, you know, so, you know, a couple of days of high anxiety about something, you know, I wouldn't get too concerned about it. I would talk with your child about it, let them express their feelings, try to understand what's going on. But, you know, if it persists and it's for, you know, a longer period of time, if your child, you know, it's normal for child to go, you know, what if I die? What if you die? What if, you know, here and there. But if your child is consumed with a good number of, you know, hours of their day with what if questions that have them really perturbed, well, then that's something you want to look into. If they are, you know, it has to do with, you know, how much of their time are they spending being anxious, and how much is it impairing their functioning?
That's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, is it situational or is it chronic, right? Does it keep persisting,
right,
or is it just kind of a temporary? You know, when you said that, though, about what if I die? What if you die? That is such a big question for people, for children. Can you, how would you answer that for a child?
Well, existential thoughts about mortality are, as soon as a child developmentally is able to understand the permanence, mm-hmm. which is, you know, already, you know, pretty much elementary school. How would you answer that? The problem is, you cannot promise, and it's not necessarily great to, you wouldn't want to lie to your child and say, I will never die and you will never die. you know, and to some degree, what you're helping your child to do is to cope with feelings of uncertainty without being overtaken by those feelings and fears of uncertainty. So there's a certain amount of saying, you know, I'm healthy, you're healthy, mm-hmm. don't see us going anywhere anytime soon. You know, so I'm curious why you're worrying about that. What are you, you know, what really is on your mind? What's the question about that? I mean, kids, mm-hmm. it's normal to have curiosity, and it may be that they have increased curiosity about that, so you don't necessarily want to jump to, you know, don't worry, it'll never happen, you know. Let them talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's certainly fine to reassure them if nothing, you know, imminent is going on, that is the case and you're not concerned. But it's also okay to open the door, to let them talk about their, share their thoughts about it and ask their questions about, you know, and then what, or, you know, what keeps one from, or mm-hmm. what does that feel like, or whatever they might be wondering about.
So we are talking with Dr.
So, Kelly, you have young children, Kelly, and mine's a grown up now, 24. But, Kelly, have your children ever asked you that question?
Oh, all the time. All the time.
They do.
Yeah. I mean, but, I think you were so helpful, Dr. Salz, because, you know, as a Jewish mom, I tend to rush in like, don't worry, it's OK, I'm not going anywhere. And yeah, we really have to get kind of to the root of it. Like, you know, what are you concerned about? You know, and so I really like that idea of just exploring it with the child and sort of answering the questions that they have, not automatically jumping in and trying to comfort. So I really appreciate that because I will take that to heart.
But hey, the good news is that, you know, high intelligence really co-evolved with worry.
Yes.
And, you know, there are certain potential strengths that come along with being anxious. Obviously, you know, overwhelming anxiety is not a good thing. It undoes you, which is why I advocate for treatment. But mild to moderate anxiety often goes along with very particular strengths, such as a drive to perform well. Mm-hmm. A hypervigilance, which is hardwired in with anxiety, and that pertains to work. Like, I'm really scanning the work, I'm looking ahead, I'm detail-oriented, I have some perfectionism, so it has to be right. But also, hypervigilance can apply to social scanning, and people who are anxious often read others' faces very well, read the emotional energy in the room very well, and may head off, you know, a sort of emotional situation because they see it coming sooner than others.
Sure. So while I was saying before, we're talking with Dr. Gail Saltz. She is the author of The Power of Different. And I'm curious how you explain it, because I feel like it's sort of funny. I feel like in today's world, most kids are pretty great about other kids' just difference and, you know, uniqueness, and we're kind of really, I'm seeing that a lot in my kids' school, which is wonderful. But I think what I'm seeing is sort of the parents not really understanding kids' differences. And if you can talk a little bit about that, and maybe the best way to talk to other parents and explain, hey, my child has a difference, or this is what it looks like, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, this is a difficult situation. You know, I think often in an attempt to reassure oneself as a parent that your child is doing great, you may inadvertently judge other children to not be doing as great and to express those judgments. And, you know, this sort of judgmentalness often comes out of this desire to, you know, compare and find yourself doing well. If you had less anxiety that you weren't doing well, you know, you might not feel as much of a need to compare and judge poorly. You know, I think, yes, schools are making a greater effort to teach tolerance of all sorts. Not that they're specifically have addressed mental health issues so well for the most part, I find, but mm-hmm. But other kinds of tolerance. And, you know, it's hard because generationally, you know, if you grew up in a family where, you know, mental health issues were really stigmatized, and talked about in a very judgmental way, you know, it's hard to get rid of that. It really is hard to get rid of that. And What I try to tell parents is, you know, if you talk a lot in a judgy way about other children and create that judgmental nature in your child, it's not just that your child will judge and maybe not treat others kindly. It's that your child will also judge themselves. Mm. That voice gets turned inward, and, you know, children can really be incredibly harsh and devastating with themselves. Like, you know, I have to be all these things that my parents talked about being the best, whatever that is, you know, the cutest, the prettiest, the, you know, the thinnest, the smartest, the A student, the, you know, all of these things. And then, you know, goodness forbid when the time comes that there is something, and there will be something, you know, a child really can feel like they're the worst, you know, and just be devastated and not have a way of dealing with that. So it behooves your parent, even, you know, all parents, I think, even on behalf of their own children, even if we're putting society aside, which I hope we wouldn't, to, you know, really try to not reflect that this is bad and this is good, but more this is different and this is different, and oh, that's an interesting variation, and oh, we all have our relative strengths and weaknesses, would just be a healthier way to go.
Well, and I love that, and I love
that. Oh, my gosh, I'm diving in here, Kelly, just for a second here, because I so relate to what you're saying from my own childhood, Dr. Saltz, of experiencing that my parents were immigrants, and they met well, of course, and they always wanted to, they felt different, obviously. They were immigrants from two different areas, one from Estonia, one from Poland, Holocaust survivor, just a lot of differences. They felt so, I think, out of place in so many situations that they were always trying to kind of make sure that they were normalized. And so when they would talk in the family, it was always about, oh, well, they're not quite right, or they're not, you know, kind of to deal with their own stuff. But as a child, I translated that into, I'm not right. Something's wrong with me, you know. So all the shame that can somehow be generated from someone trying to do something that's really kind and loving, but it doesn't end up translating that way to a child. I love what you're saying about not doing these comparisons of this one's better or this one's best or this one's, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, unfortunately so. And it's really hard in this day and age to avoid that, because it's, I mean, as you can see, on a collective level, it just goes on, you know, every microsecond. So it's challenging, and you really have to kind of work hard at it, because your child, certainly outside the family, will be exposed to it. And, you know, obviously one is trying to emphasize the things that hopefully really matter, like integrity and, you know, your values and being a good person, a kind person. And, you know, that is something that, you know, obviously one would have to work at home and in school.
When I see it too with parents of two children, you know, it's like, well, your brother is the hardworking one and you're the social one, or like, you know, we constantly, you know, differentiate, you know, between the two, and or why, you know, why is it that your sister, she's quiet at the restaurant, and, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's that comparing and despairing.
Yeah, and finding one wanting. Yeah. I mean, look, we live in a competitive world, and there, you know, I mean, you know, I can't say don't acknowledge difference. That would be disingenuous and dishonest. But seeing it as difference as opposed to good and bad is probably a healthier way to go. And to some degree, look, I you know, in this book, what I tried to do is break down these different arenas, whether we're talking about dyslexia or ADD or anxiety or mood issue or autism spectrum, that, you know, yes, there are struggles here. No question about it. You should get treatment. It can make a huge difference. And there's really, you know, nothing to be gained by, you know, not doing that. And at the same time, you know, if you're the parent or if you're the affected one, looking for what the potential strengths are, I hoped that this book would be somewhat of a guide to clue people into what they are likely to be, because there are these strong correlates with particular strengths. But you know, exposing your child to many things to see what, you know, what resonates for them, what they seem to have capacity in, what they enjoy, talking to educators of theirs about the things that they do have aptitude in and what might be malleable in a curriculum to allow them to say, do the project this way as opposed to that way, so they can really show what they know and also immerse themselves in it and love doing it, because it's their strength and it's not playing to the thing that really is difficult and doesn't work for them. Not that you shouldn't try to help them also develop workarounds for whatever the issues are at hand, and try to, you know, shore up the thing that they're struggling with.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah. Dr. Saltz, do you still have some more time? Because we have more time if you're available for us.
Sure. Probably about five.
Okay. Five more minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would love to know how you would explain to your own child if you saw that your child had a brain difference of some sort.
Uh-huh. So I think to some degree along the same lines, you know, hey, everybody has strengths and weaknesses. This is difficult for you. I see it. You know, we do want to dip into treatment and, you know, help you with this. But it also means that you have some particular real strengths. And, you know, I see you're good at this. I see you like this. You know, let's pursue that. That's at least as important. You know, like, this is your picture, and your picture is ever evolving. So, you know, as things change, that may shift, and we're going to keep pursuing that. So different is more complicated than, you know, it's good, it's bad. But I also think it's fair to say, first of all, to your child, that, you know, close to half of all Americans at some point or another will have a mental health diagnosis. So the idea that this is so abnormal is not so true. You know, that they just won't know who is struggling and who isn't necessarily, but that there are many others around struggling with the same thing or struggling with something different. I think that's an important thing to communicate. To help them understand that, you know, this isn't about moral character. You know, this is about the brain, and there are variations, and there are sometimes variations that really can create suffering, and that's why we have to attend to them.
Mm, absolutely wonderful.
Beautiful.
This has been so insightful and so helpful. Can you tell
people
where they can find you and where they can find the book and all of that media stuff?
Absolutely. So, right, it's called The Power of Different, The Link Between Disorder and Genius. And I profile many people in it, too, who struggled with these particular issues. I think that's really important for individuals and for children to know that there are these people out there doing unbelievable things and struggling with the same thing you are. It is, you know, it's available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your bookstore, pretty much wherever, mm-hmm. you know, books are sold. If people would like to reach out, feel free to tweet me at Dr. Gail Saltz, DrGailSaltz, or they can look for more information on my website, www.drgailsaltz.com. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And our listeners, please don't tune out yet, because Kelly and I are going to have lots of chatting about this right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Saltz.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
So interesting. Hi.
Wow. Yeah. So, Kelly, who do you have anybody in your, I think your husband's a genius, right? Is he like a genius?
He's very smart. He would love that you termed him that. Yeah, he's very, very smart. And, you know, it's like, it's so true. It's like, just looking at every person I know, I can see sort of these, you know, really incredible strengths and maybe some challenges, but like, it just depends on how you look at it. You know, like she said, like the anxiety, it's so true. It's like, if we have anxiety, we can just turn it around and recognize, well, that helps us, you know, be motivated and sort of be, you know, anal in our work and different things. So it was a really good perspective. What about you? Who are you
thinking
about?
Well, it's so funny because I grew up with some family friends that my parents, they had two sets of friends that they're very important to them, you know, and their kids and families and stuff. So we do a lot of things with them. And then when one of the kids, you know, everybody would laugh at him because he was so incredibly smart, but everybody would just roll their eyes, but he can never find his socks. Like, he cannot find a pair of socks if his life depended on it in his drawer, but he could solve, you know, world peace, basically. So it was always interesting. And my own little story, too, is it's interesting. I love that she was talking about labels and how do we present to kids when things are different and not make them good or bad. Because I remember I had a group of my girlfriends when I was growing up. They were all brilliant. So then they had these testing things, right, when you were a kid. They would test you to see whether you go into the high advanced level of something or whether your IQ wasn't quite there up to snuff to get into those classes. So I was always this incredible student, but I never made the cut of the, I guess, whatever they called it, not quite the genius level, but, you know, that kind of IQ level.
Sure.
And all my friends got moved into this other program. And I felt so dejected and so bad. Like, I was maybe like 3 points away from making the cut. And my mother would try to fight for me to get in there because I think you're going to alienate me from my best girlfriends.
Oh.
And it was, I remember this as a stigma that I grew up with, thinking like, okay, I know I'm pretty smart and I'm a good student, but I didn't make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, in her title of genius, you know, it's like, how do you present to someone? Well, if someone hears that someone else is genius and someone else isn't, how do we work on that? You know, that's I wish we could have answered that question.
Sure,
that's
sure.
So interesting to me is, what if you're not, I mean, genius obviously is considered a great thing in our society, right? So you get a good label, you like it. You get a bad label, you don't like it.
It's so true. Well, I mean, I'm wondering if she would say, well, we would just have to find the strengths and that other person and say, okay, yeah, look, you know, this person, you know, has, you know, great intelligence, but look at you, you can do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, that person may not be able to do that. Like, that would be my guess.
But on a global level, I think it's our duty as, you know, mothers, as humans, as friends, as psychologists, as therapists, to try to kind of really support and look at this whole concept of labeling and how labeling can, in good or bad, can be very, very damaging, and how we do that in a neutral way. Like, I don't have the answer to that. I just think it's a question that's so worth exploring and talking about. Because if you make up, you know, we do judgment and labels all the time, right? We're not even aware of it half the time.
But then I think, too, I mean, there's some relief. So it's like when I think about, you know, my son and when we talked about having ADHD, I think there was like a relief with him. It was like, oh, okay, that's why I feel like, you know, my mind's going 100 miles per hour. It's like there was sort of like there was just a relief in knowing, okay, you know, I'm not alone in this. There's a reason for it. So in some ways it's like an explanation, but I guess, you know, it can be detrimental.
I totally agree. It's because the label, though, helps it to make sense. Sadly, though, in our culture, we have labels that people attribute to either something being good or bad.
Right.
As opposed to an explanation. And so I think that actually diagnoses or understanding things in a sort of a category can be very helpful. It's just, how do we get rid of the stigma about that's, oh, you just have that label now, that's bad, as opposed to, oh, that explains it.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes.
I get it.
Well, I think the other thing that helps is just being open about it. I think a lot of parents, especially, you know, they feel embarrassed or they feel ashamed. But I think once you sort of open it up, you recognize, oh, okay, other people's children have this as well. You know, I mean, I think that's a lot of it is just that shame. I mean, think about how many actors come out and say, oh, I have dyslexia or, you know, this or that. And then it kind of like it just normalizes it, I think, for a lot of people.
Totally. I think we're doing really good things, too, by being more outspoken in the media and all these books that come out that do talk about these things in a way that's not like, oh, the secret in the closet that you can't talk about because it's like this alien thing that somebody has.
Yes.
It's really powerful. We've made a lot of advances, I think, in our thinking. But then I think, too, I still, you know, you meet people from like other countries and other states, and there's still a lot of stigma around mental issues, mental, I don't want to say mental illness, around,
right.
You know,
yeah,
depression, anxiety, so like somehow you're still like damaged or something's
yes.
wrong. And I think one of our messages in our show is really to help people understand that there is no shame in anything that we're all struggling with. These are just things that we all make mistakes. We're all human. We're all mm-hmm. imperfect. And what is perfection anyway, right?
Exactly.
Who knows?
No, I 100% agree. And the other thing that I wanted to say that's really a wonderful tool is there's a book, and you know, I don't get any kickbacks or anything. I really just love this book. It's called Red, A Crayon's Story. And it's so adorable. And a friend of mine told me about it. And it's basically about this blue crayon that has a red label. So everyone expects this crayon to draw in red, but he draws in blue. And it is fantastic because it's like, you know, the grandmother thought that he just needed to try harder and press harder. You know, it was like, you know, the teacher thought that he just needed to sharpen himself, you know, and it was like, it's so good.
Oh, this
and
is so cute. This is a children's
adorable,
book.
A children's book. And then at the end, this another crayon says, hey, will you draw me a blue ocean? And he says, I can't, I'm red. And she said, well, just try.
Oh.
And so he draws a blue ocean. And she says, look, you did it. And he said, yeah. And she said, it was just so adorable. Like, it's basically like, look, you know, don't get caught up in the label. Like, you are who you are. And people are going to appreciate, you know, that part of you. I mean, it's just fabulous. So it's a great book.
I love that.
Yeah, isn't that cute?
Now you have you read it to your kids, of course.
Yes, yes. It's seriously one of my all-time favorite books. I just love the message. I love the drawings. It's a really good tool.
So,
yeah, really
that's
cute.
So sweet. So let me tell you a little bit. Yes, that's awesome. But so here's a little story I'll tell you, too, about my weekend, because it was a total experience in differences and how wonderful cultural differences can be. So Chris and I actually go to a sushi place on a regular basis, and our sushi chef is just adorable. Like, he knows us now. We're so loyal. And so he invited us to his home in Koreatown this last weekend.
Oh my God, that's so adorable.
Yes. So we went there on Sunday, and we spent 5 hours with them literally sharing a feast with us of all of their local markets and the sushi that they got and the different fish. And he remembered the things that are our favorites, so he made sure he got those.
God.
And he prepared all the stuff, so we met his, and they hardly speak any English. So his daughter, who is 17 years old, translated for the most part. So so grown up, so amazing, so delightful. But talking about, like, wow, you know, a lot of times I think people label things or have trouble because we don't embrace difference.
Yes.
But we are very different cultures, very different. You know, we take the shoes off and put it was so delightful. It was probably one of the highlights of my best top 10 experiences of my life.
Oh my God. That's incredible. Yes. I feel like
it was incredible.
Yeah. We need more of that. We absolutely need more of
that. We do.
Yeah.
But if he hadn't reached out to us, how would we ever get to have that experience? You know
exactly.
what I'm saying?
Yes.
He reached out to us to thank us for being loyal customers to him, you know, and you know, and we do. I mean, this is our place.
Right.
And he's amazing. He's always so sweet. And so he embraced us, and we're totally different, right? We're different backgrounds, different languages, different this, different that. It was just one of the prettiest, sweetest, wonderful experiences
Deborah,
of my life.
We're getting a call. Hang on 1 second. Hi, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and therapist Kelly. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you.
Hi, did you have a question?
Hi. I have a question. It's not on the subject that you're talking about, though. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, cool. So I'm having a little personal dilemma, and I thought you guys might shed some light. One of my really closest girlfriends was, like, seeing a man, and she fell in love with him and found out that he was married, and she...
Oh, Deborah, you
started seeing him again, and, you know, I really had lots of heart-to-hearts with her about how horrible this is just for her, really focusing on her existential thing, issue, you know, like what lies for her and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, then she ended it with him again, and then I find out she's seeing him again, and I'm having so much trouble with it personally. As a married woman, first of all, I'm just having a really hard time with it. But our kids are friends, and I've kind of been avoiding her. And I know that sooner or later she's going to realize why. Like, I just honestly have trouble being in her presence right now. So my question is, should I just, like, have a sit-down and heart-to-heart with her and tell her why and, like, let her know why I'm distancing myself? Or should I just wait, like, till she approaches me about it?
No, I think that's a good idea. I think you should be honest about it. I mean, this is a close friend of yours, yes?
Yes.
Okay, hold on one second. We just lost Dr. Deborah. Let me just put her through. Okay, hold on. I'm going to try to... Oh, gosh.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Okay, hold on, Deborah. I'm so sorry. Whenever I get another call, I can't seem to resume it. Okay, hold on one second. Let me see.
Okay. Do we have a caller?
Yes, we have a caller. I'm going to try to put her through. Hold on before I have to ask our engineer.
You know, Mercury is in retrograde now, too. So
that
we're...
makes complete sense. Okay, so hold on one second. Let me see if I can get back to this. Okay, hold on.
You want to, I can entertain for a moment if you want to run
yes.
out and get Ronan.
Okay, hold on. I don't know if she can hear you either, but hold on one second.
Okay. Well,
you know what?
Listeners, I'm so glad you're listening and you are chatting and listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly show. But of course, you already know that. That's why you're listening in. And we're having little minute technical issues. I guess that's where you get to go roll with the punches here and go with the flow. Anyway, please don't tune out. Hang on one second. I think I'm not in studio today, and Kelly's going to go off and check with Ronan to see if we can hear the caller. And caller, if you're listening.
Yes,
hello?
Are you still there, caller? Hello? She's still there?
Nope.
Hello? Looks like it's connected, but let me see.
Did our caller have a question?
Yes, she had a question. So I guess, you know what, maybe we can answer it.
Yes, what was the question?
Here. Okay. Okay, so, gosh, let me see. Basically, she had said that she's basically disapproving of something that her friend is doing. And she wants to know, she's sort of distancing herself from her friend, and she wants to know if she should... tell her friend, you know, how she feels about it.
Call has been forwarded to an...
Oh, okay. Today is definitely the technical difficulties day.
Technology?
Yes.
Yes. Technology okay. challenged. Okay.
So
that's
anyway...
We're technology challenged.
Yes.
That's good. Okay.
So, so she wants to know if she should be honest with her friend about, you know, why she's distancing herself. And so I was saying, yes, I truly believe, and I was asking about the friendship and sort of what... you know, how close she was with a friend. But yeah, I mean, I'm just a believer that, especially with a close friend, I feel like that's the type of relationship that you should have. You should be able to say, hey, listen, you know, I'm kind of upset about something, and, you know, this is why I'm sort of hanging back. And so, yeah, I mean, how would you answer that?
Totally on board. I think our first step in being able to become less negatively judgmental is by embracing whatever judgments we have, because judgments come from fear.
Yes.
So, clearly, she's having some fear about something that looks different or she doesn't approve of. And I think acknowledging and understanding where that comes from within her and maybe what's going on with her friend, because everything is not what it appears too, right?
Right.
So we make assessments and interpretations about why someone's behaving as they are, sometimes without a context. So
That's
I think being
point.
Curious
Mm-hmm.
and interested in finding out more is a great way to go with people.
I 100% agree. I think that's so true, because I think so much of what, you know, maybe we think may not be the actual case. And I think it is worth exploring and wondering and, you know, just being more curious. I like that a lot. Great advice, as always.
And listeners, we do love your phone calls. So please, at any time, give us a call during the show or send us your emails. And we're out of time. Miss Kelly, Miss Licensed Therapist Kelly, LCSW.
I love you. You're so adorable. So I apologize, listeners, today for our crazy technical issues. But I guess it happens. And we rolled with it. That's the most important part. So, all right, and next week, I'm so excited. We have, there's a great new documentary called Prison Dogs, and we're going to have the crew and the producers on that show. So that's going to be really, really interesting. Can't wait for that.
Very exciting. Okay, I love you, Kelly.
I love you so much.
I love you, audience. Thank you so much for listening to us.
And we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.